Lotharingia, a personal history of France, Germany, and the countries in between, by Simon Winder, read by Peter Noble. For CMJ. On the day of judgment, we shall not be asked what we have read, but what we have done. Thomas A. Kempis. Introduction. I was in the Ardennes, on a bus travelling from Stavelot to Spa. The bus was filled to bursting with primary and secondary school children, and I was the only adult, aside from the magnificently stone-faced and imperturbable driver. It was midwinter, and the fog was so solid that it looked as though, once outside the bus, you would have to be resigned to washing it out of your hair and brushing strands of it off your coat. The bus was, frankly, a monkey house on wheels. One child was using a lighter to burn through a plastic handle. Another had a phone app which converted a pupil's photo into a demon face. At irregular intervals, an inflated condom was fired over our heads to happy cries. The whole atmosphere was hilarious, and you almost expected the bus to rock from side to side as it drove along, like in an exuberant cartoon. It made me feel wistful about the long-gone years spent waiting for my own children in various school playgrounds. I had forgotten the magical way in which large groups of children flicker in their moods, managing to be morose, thrilled, exhausted, and hyper in perhaps less than a second. Each stop made by the fog-bound bus was a surprise. As the doors hissed open, a clump of children would gamely launch themselves into what appeared to be a solid form of milk of magnesia, with just a roof angle visible to indicate houses of some kind, and the odd skeletal branch. In all kinds of ways, this bus was really in the middle of nowhere, a series of rugged, thinly populated valleys which most Europeans have no need to engage with. From the air, you would be able to see each valley filled to the brim with fog. But, like so many places I will write about in this book, it has had its turn as the center of the world. Most obviously, this was where the Battle of the Bulge was fought, the last major attempt by the Germans to defeat the Western Allies. The little town of Stavelot, of which I had previously been entirely ignorant, was where the battle reached its high watermark in December 1944. American troops had kept destroying bridges and blocking the narrow roads by felling thousands of trees. The Germans kept rigging up pontoons and blowing up the obstacles. But at Stavelot, they briefly entered the town, massacred dozens of its inhabitants, could not fight their way through, tried to drive round, failed, and began the retreat, which only stopped with their surrender in May. A small marker in the town states, "Here the invader was stopped." I was surrounded by the same fog that had made the initial German attack through the Ardennes so successful. But this was just one part of the region's central role in the 20th century. It was, famously, the source of the British and French armies' crushing and almost instantaneous defeat in 1940. As thousands of German tanks and troop lorries secretly wound their way through the same narrow roads. During the First World War, the town of Spa was the German military headquarters in the fighting's later period. A series of photos taken in 1918 show the last weeks of imperial and aristocratic rule in Germany, as Kaiser Wilhelm II, the Crown Prince, and various generals stand around hobnobbing in their immaculate uniforms in one of Spa's commandeered assembly rooms. It was in these rooms that the Kaiser, hearing about the revolution breaking out in Berlin, appealed to his generals for support, only to find that they no longer trusted their men and could not even guarantee that they would not attack him. Wilhelm panicked